You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network. Attention all theater lovers! This Sunday, April 21st, Broadway Podcast Network is holding the first ever Broadway Podfest, a full day of podcast recordings with some of your favorite Broadway stars, live from the Museum of Broadway, which is right in the heart of Times Square. The day begins at 11 a.m. Eastern and features a full day of programming that you don't want to miss. Visit bpn.fm/podfest to get all the details and register to attend for free. That's bpn.fm/podfest.
You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
Hi, and welcome to The Compass, the podcast documenting the struggles of life as an artist. I'm Leah Walsh. My guest today is Justin Favela. Justin is an incredible visual artist and the co-host of a great podcast called Latinos Who Lunch. He is friends with Kim Miller, who created the cover art for The Compass. She was also on episode 13. They're friends out in Las Vegas, and she introduced me to Latinos Who Lunch when it came out last year. I've listened ever since. It's hilarious and thought-provoking and just really charming. I was so excited to have had the chance to talk with Justin over Skype for this episode and hear about his artwork and starting the podcast and figuring out a life in the arts in Las Vegas. Please check out Latinos Who Lunch, and while you're in the iTunes store, if you have a moment, please leave The Compass a little rating and review. I'd really appreciate it. And Happy New Year. It's going to be a difficult year for all of us in many different ways, so let's keep it moving, let's stay active and productive, and really help each other in 2017. I hope you enjoy the 58th episode of The Compass. So what do you do to try to keep from going to the dark side as an artist? And what is the dark side for you?
Well, chicken nuggets mostly. what is the dark side for me? As an artist, I think that just staying motivated and not doubting yourself, that's probably my biggest struggle. So whenever I find myself with a 20-piece ticket, I know that it's time to reset and that there's something really going on in my life that I need to evaluate. So, I think, like I said, staying motivated and, being an artist isn't the easiest thing. So you really have to have a passion for it. And sometimes the encouragement of others isn't enough. You really have to kind of be in this groove and motivation within yourself kind of thing. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I find myself in these slumps where I'm feeling very creative and very motivated to work. And then all of a sudden, like the last 2 weeks, like I haven't made anything in my studio.
Yeah.
And I feel really bad about it. And I know I can just change that immediately by going in and making something, but I haven't yet. But tomorrow will be the day that starts.
Yeah, I guess sometimes it's about just starting before you have the inspiration, and just the act of starting.
Yeah. So that's kind of my resolution this year, is to have a schedule. Like, all right, I'm going to be in the studio this many hours every day, no matter what, in the morning, and I'm going to see how it works. Usually I feel most creative at night. That's usually when I work, but I don't know. I think there's something about waking up in the morning and just going to work that is important and I think is more productive.
Yeah. Well, that's a good resume. Yeah. I kind of love that we're talking right at the beginning of the new year.
I know, right? Yeah. This year is going to be something. Everybody's like, oh my God, 2016 sucked. I can't wait for this new year to start. But 2017 is going to be rough, everybody.
That's how I feel too. It's like we're getting closer to January 20th. I'm very nervous.
Oh my God. I know. Yeah. 2016 was great for me. I mean, yeah. I don't know. This year's going to be rough, I feel.
Yeah. Can I ask do you have a day job right now, or are you just doing your artwork?
Well, yeah, my main job is doing my art now, which is incredible. That just happened like 2 years ago.
That's fantastic.
But I do have I do have to pay my rent once in a while. Mm-hmm. I do need a little bit of steady income. So I actually work for Clark County Parks and Recreation here in Las Vegas, and I'm their art curator.
Oh,
so
cool.
It's a pretty sweet job. It's like 20 hours a week max. I don't even have to work that much. And I'm in charge of the exhibitions in two of the county buildings.
That's amazing.
So, yeah. So I curate the gallery in that cultural center, and then there's a big government building here that I curate the work for in this big common area. So that's probably my main job. I'm also an art handler, like many artists, so mm-hmm. I'm on call whenever some rich person decides they want a painting over a different piece of furniture. That's when I go and change it, you know.
That must be interesting to get a peek into those people's houses and stuff.
Oh my gosh, it's amazing. It's exciting to see like all of this art in people's houses, but it's also very depressing to see how the other side lives.
Yep. I feel like there's a novel in that, like you could write a book about the things you observe.
Totally. Yeah, I've done some art jobs where I'm like, oh my gosh, this work that I'm moving here is worth more than my life. Like, oh my God. I have to be careful. Like, if I drop this, like, I'm dead. This is it. Oh my gosh.
Yeah, well, yeah. I'm just curious, like, that financial part of it is so weird for artists of all kinds. So, yeah, I like having that honest conversation about. So, what's your side hustle? How do you make this work? All of that.
You have to have a bunch. Yeah, I mean, you have to have little side hustles unless you're one of those magic art stars that just, like, has a gallery that's really putting in the work and all your focus is just to keep producing, you know?
Yeah. Do you always work independently or do you do a lot of collaborative stuff?
I try to work collaboratively all the time because it really motivates me to be working with other people. So a lot of my artwork focuses on my identity, and it also brings in my family a lot of the time. So a lot of my work is about my family, and I get to collaborate with them. And just a lot of collaborations with other artists, too. I really enjoy doing that because any time that I collaborate on a painting or a sculpture with somebody else, I learn something new. And that's really exciting. Like my friend, I have a friend in town. His name is Jesse Smigel, mm-hmm. and he is like a desert pirate. I consider him. He's amazing. He's such a weirdo, and he has this big styrofoam studio in his backyard. So that's his main medium. And before, I didn't used to use styrofoam, but I worked with him a couple years ago on a big project, and now I regularly use styrofoam in my work, so it always kind of changes your perspective and just the materials you use. You just feel more comfortable. So in that simple way, it's a really cool thing. And then also just being around other people. And, you know, there's always the storyline of this artist in a studio, like, by himself going through it and, like, you know, channeling his energy or her energy into this artwork. And that, to me, that's bullshit. I'd rather have other people in my space working with me, you know, currently in the studio space that I'm in now, I have friends working here with me. Like, so
cool.
I don't use the walls 'cause I'm not a 2D painter. So, I have my friend Lance Smith in the studio painting and while I'm working on a sculpture on the other side of the studio, and that's just that's motivating in itself.
Yeah, whenever you see someone else like really, really doing their thing, it keeps you on your toes a little bit.
Yeah, for sure.
I'm just going to ask you, I think the mic is rubbing a little bit on your sweatshirt.
Oh, no.
If you don't mind just shifting it a little bit, that's awesome.
Yeah.
Perfect. Yeah, totally. That's great. So how long have you had your own studio space?
It changes. So usually my studio is in my garage at my house. Mm-hmm. And I've gotten a lot of really cool opportunities. Right now I'm in like a commercial space downtown that has like a mid-rise building above it. Mm-hmm. So it's a really sweet setup. I'm in a storefront basically, and then I live above it.
Oh, cool.
And it's an experiment with a property owner. He's just trying it out. And I'm the first artist in resident at this building. So it's just a crazy opportunity. The owner randomly came up to me at an art show and offered me the space. So,
oh my gosh.
And before this, I was at a co-working space that had a garage behind it in Vegas here, and I was working out of that garage. So I just kind of go from studio to studio because I really can't afford to rent one.
Right. Yeah. You got to get creative. Mm-hmm. And have you always lived in Vegas? I don't remember.
Yeah.
You always
have. I was born and raised here. Yeah.
That's something I wanted to ask you about because I grew up in Michigan and then I've been in New York for 11 years. And I'm so interested, and I find it wonderful that you've stuck with Las Vegas and you're so involved. You've made your art such a part of the city, and you've really used all of your resources and opportunities in the city where you grew up. And I think that's wonderful. What's that like for you?
Yeah, I mean, I love Vegas. I was born and raised here, so to me, it's home. And I see myself traveling. I see myself maybe even living somewhere else, but I'm always going to come back to Las Vegas. And it's just such an interesting place. To me, it's normal. It's just like a normal town. But I do love when friends visit or I just meet people for the first time and they can't believe that I live in such a weird town.
Right.
And it's like, I get to see Vegas through their eyes when I come. And then it reminds me of what a cool place this is. Just because, I mean, Vegas is always changing and it's really a reflection of the world here, like of what people want or... I don't know. To me now, Vegas is becoming this like very globalized version of kind of entertainment districts all over the world. So like traveling, no matter where I go, I see Las Vegas because it's trying to attract people from everywhere.
Right.
Right. Yeah. And I mean, I have all my family here and we're all connected to this town. Most of my family works in the casinos, you know, maintenance and cleaning or in the restaurants. Mm-hmm. And it's just, the city has been good to our family. So I think because of them, I'll be around here for a long time. And also we're in the West. So for artists, it's nice because we have a little bit more space than in other places. Where a studio the size that I have is, I don't think I could find, you know, like in New York.
Yeah.
Right. Or.
No, I'm a little jealous of the cost of living out there.
It's pretty good right now. We'll see what happens after this year because they just legalized marijuana and that's gonna like for recreational use. And we'll see. We'll see if that brings a lot of people over here. We'll see. I don't know.
Yeah, that might. What does your family make of you being an artist and being a part of your work?
I don't think they get it.
Yeah.
I think my mom is finally understanding. Like, she finally has accepted, like, this past year that I'm an artist.
Mm-hmm.
I remember a couple years ago, she had this serious conversation with me. It was like, Justin, I really think this art thing that you're doing is taking over your life and you really need to focus on I'm getting your shit together. And I'm like, Mom, art is my life. What are you talking about? She thought it was a distraction, right?
Well, you majored in it in school, right? You studied art in school.
But it's they thought that I was studying art to teach art.
Gotcha.
So, and I kind of went with it, to be honest. Like, I was just like, yeah, sure. I'm going to be an art teacher. That's what I'm doing. No problem. So,
sure, Mom.
Sometimes to my grandmas, I do have to just be like, yeah, I'm an art teacher. I'm doing great. The school I work at is fantastic.
Yeah.
but.
No, it can be hard. It can be a weird lifestyle.
They're my family.
Oh, sorry. You broke up for a second.
Yeah, it's weird. Oh, can you hear me?
Yeah, go ahead.
So, yeah, it's because it's not a steady income. And I think, especially for immigrant families, the idea of choosing that lifestyle is mind-boggling. Like, wait a minute. You live in Las Vegas where you have an office. Like, I've had administrative jobs for a long time. Like, you have a steady paycheck. You have a 401k. Why are you leaving to be an artist? That's ridiculous, right?
Yeah.
I'm definitely the black sheep of the family. I'll just say that when it comes to my career and what I've chosen to do. And, but I think I can make it work, at least for the next few years.
So I'm sure there are other people who are artistically inclined in your family, even if they haven't, pursued it for a living, but yeah, if it is such an odd concept to them that you're an artist, how do you get them to participate in your work?
Well, it's because my family is very supportive. So when I tell them, like when I go to my grandma and say, hey, grandma, let's collaborate on a crochet sculpture. She just says, sure, whatever you need, mijo, whatever you want. And they'll jump in and help me. Or we do these performances called Family Fiesta, where mm-hmm. we travel to different institutions and have like a old-fashioned, old-school Mexican party in front of, we had one at Crystal Bridges Museum of American Art in Arkansas on the front lawn of the museum. We had one on the roof of the Nevada Museum of Art in Reno. And I just say, hey, guys, you want to go to Reno with me? I'll pay for your plane ticket. What we're going to do is just party, you know. And they're like, sure, we'll go with you. They see it as an adventure kind of thing. And surprisingly, they don't ask questions. They're really there. It's just like a very Latino thing, just to like, all right, mijo, we're just going to go and we're going to help you. Whatever you need us to do, we'll do it. So
that's really, really sweet.
Yeah, it's been really cool. And they don't really ask questions. They're just there to help.
Do you have brothers and sisters?
I have two half brothers, and they're pretty creative, but they didn't go to college, so I feel like they would be better artists than I am if they went to art school, because they're super talented. One of my brothers is a musician, and one of them is in construction right now, but he loves to draw, and his drawings are amazing. So I think they just need to, not that going to college is like the thing to do, but you know, that would have just allowed them to spend more time working on their art. And I think that's what it did for me. It just gave me the motivation to spend more time on it and think about what I was doing. So I always encourage my brothers to keep go, you know, spending time on their, but also, you know, people got to eat. So I totally get it.
People got to eat. That's true. speaking of eating, can you tell me about Latinos Who Lunch and about why you guys started it? And
well, Latinos Who Lunch has been so fun to do. It's a podcast with my friend Emmanuel Ortega, who is an art historian. So I love podcasts. Podcasts have really, you know, we're talking about our dark place at the beginning. They've really taken me out of that place. Like, the first thing I do in the morning is I get up, and while I'm getting ready, I'll put on a podcast. Just, there's always a voice there. There's always, I always feel like I'm with a friend.
Yeah.
With podcasting. And I found Black podcasts a couple years ago, and just podcasts made by Black people for Black people. And I really loved that, because it was like this community just making these podcasts, making this art for themselves, because there wasn't anybody else doing it. So they took it upon themselves to do it. And I was really looking for a Latino version of that, a brown version of that. And I couldn't, there wasn't really any podcast. The closest was like NPR's Latino USA, but that's like a very produced. No, I love podcasts like yours, where it's like a conversation and it's just two people talking and it's not so formal. So for a couple of years, I was telling my friend Emmanuel, we would be sitting at a coffee shop talking, like, we should record this. This would be a fun podcast, you know?
You guys are so funny together. It's so cute.
Oh my gosh. So finally, I was like, you know what? Let's just borrow some equipment and let's make this happen. And Latinos Who Lunch had its first episode this past May. And now we're about, I don't know, 22 episodes deep. And it's been an amazing experience. Not only coming out with this podcast, but connecting. I feel like... When we started Latinos Who Lunch, there weren't many podcasts out there like us. And then I realized that at the same time we were thinking about having our own Latino podcast, so many other people were starting their own too. So now there's this amazing community of Latino podcasts, and we've actually kind of cross-interviewed on our show with some of our favorites.
I started listening to the Super Mamas one after you guys did that episode. I love it.
Super Mamas, they're so cool. Yeah, and we went to visit them in LA, and I was so starstruck. I was like, these are amazing. Yeah, they're so legit. Super Mamas, Tamarindo Podcast, Choices and Chismes. There's so many awesome ones. And yeah, and now I consider it a job, right? This takes, well, you know, this takes up a lot of time.
Yeah.
Especially when you produce it yourself and edit it yourself. So, but I'm going to keep going, and I've committed to doing this for at least another year or two. And what's been really cool about Latinos Who Lunch, by the way, it's we do eat in the beginning of every episode, but that's not what the podcast is really about. It's just, you know, it's the entry point, right?
Right.
It's funny because I can tell people don't listen to the podcast because they think it's just like a food review podcast. And I'm like, oh, girl, you don't know. You don't know. No.
I did feel because I just had some like tofu green curry from the Thai place. I felt like I should tell you at the beginning of our conversation, just because that's how you start your podcast.
Oh my gosh, that sounds so good right now.
it's rainy here, so.
Oh, I've been eating pizza the last like 3 days because there's like a pizza party at my house and nobody took any home. So it's time to switch it up.
just so the listeners know, tell me a little bit about the stuff you guys talk about. And also like,
oh yeah,
have your goals changed since you started it? Like the kinds of things you want to talk about?
Yeah, we talk about, we'll choose a topic for every episode. So some of our most popular episodes were about like Cholo culture and the exploitation of Cholo culture in recent like media, like on YouTube or, you know, different Latino-centric networks that are on YouTube that sometimes are crossing that line between celebration and exploitation of our own culture.
Yeah.
So there's an episode on that. We did an episode on Juan Gabriel, who just passed away, who was an iconic Mexican pop star. we've done episodes on RuPaul. We've done episodes, just whatever we like. We did a big post-election call-in episode.
I really loved that one.
Yeah, we try to switch it up and talk about different things. And I think that we are finally now, like 20 episodes in, are finding our voices and kind of this rhythm that we get into, and are really focusing on truly having conversations and not just trying to make something that's entertaining for other people. I think the more personal that it gets, the better. So before, for example, sometimes we would say something in Spanish and then we would explain what we just said so that everybody could understand. Now it's like, that doesn't matter. If you don't understand, if you don't speak Spanish, it's not like we go on forever. Like, you understand what we're saying in the context of the conversation, you know?
Yeah, totally.
What do you feel? Do you feel that? Yeah.
Yeah, I do. I listen to it and I kind of love that. Yeah, because this is who you are and it's who you're making the podcast for. I'm at the very beginning of trying to learn Spanish. Because my husband is Cuban American.
All right.
But, you know, we've been together for 10 years and I keep saying I'm going to learn. So this year is the year I'm really going to make it happen.
But I'm sure you pick it up once in a while, right?
I can understand more than I can speak.
Yeah, totally.
You know,
me too, actually.
Yeah.
We're on the same level with that.
Was it your first language was Spanish?
Spanish was my first language, but after my brothers are younger, so after my brothers were born, and then we started going to school, you just kind of lose it. And my mom eventually just started talking to us in English too. So I think that's our predominant language now is English at home when we get together. But, you know, we still have old school people in our family that whenever we get together for like Christmas or Thanksgiving, they're like, no, Spanish only in this house. So we still have to practice Spanish, which is great, which I love because it's especially in the U.S. and the West, it's great to be bilingual and speak Spanish.
Of course.
Yeah. And that's something that I love about the podcast Latinos Who Lunch is it's reconnected me to my Latinidad, to my Latino side, because I think I was, especially in the art world, like you're just in all these white spaces all the time. And as a Latino, you have to code switch. You have to filter yourself to fit in or give people what they want. So having an avenue and this podcast to just be myself and then reconnect with my brown side has been really awesome. And I'm excited to see how that's reflected in my artwork. Because now whenever I'm making a piece of artwork, for example, that's in the back of my head now. Like, who am I truly making this for? Am I making it for myself or am I making it for a white audience? It's like, am I making fun of myself? Am I exploiting myself or am I celebrating my culture?
Right.
Kind of thing. So it's the same ideas, but totally different medium.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, totally. That's something that my husband talks about and a couple of people I've had on the podcast, like being a first generation young person in this country and like how that affects you as an artist and the things that people think you can do or think you should do. And like, yeah, wanting to work and wanting to be successful, but also not wanting to be forced into stereotypes.
Yes. Yes. The expectation of what you can do and what you're supposed to know, you know, that is something that I definitely, that's the theme in my artwork, or it has been. It's kind of switched around though. Like I said, I was making a lot of artwork about the expectations of a Latino in America. And now I've kind of switched it around. And a lot of my work is about reclaiming my identity or taking it back, reappropriating things because like the taco, for example, like what even is a taco anymore in America?
Yeah.
Like going to like the Midwest and eating tacos there, you're like, what is going on here? But yeah, it's I think the taco will make a comeback in a good way pretty soon in Trump's America.
Oh my god. Yeah, yeah. Can you tell me about the show you have in Denver right now? How's that going?
Oh, sure. It's going great. I'm in the show at the Denver Art Museum. It's called Mi Tierra, Contemporary Artist Explore Place. So it's 13 contemporary artists doing installation work. And it opens February 19th. And I have to go back at the end of January and finish my installation. And my installation is based on Frida Kahlo, mm-hmm. Based on the idea of Frida Kahlo and the ties with Mexico and the ties with our idea of home. So I'm doing an installation where I've made this big mural in one of the galleries out of paper. So it's like a piñata mural of the Valley of Mexico, and they're replicas of 19th century paintings by Jose Maria Velasco, who to me was he was kind of the iconic Mexican painter before Frida Kahlo. So the walls are lined with those landscapes, and then in the center of the room, I'm doing a replica of the set from the movie Frida with Selma Hayek that came out in 2002. So mm-hmm. the Casa Azul garden, the little atrium that's in the movie at the very beginning,
right?
That's going to be all recreated with paper. So I finished the murals, but I have to go back in January 21st or something and finish the garden in the center.
That sounds amazing. And it's all, yeah. that the garden is all life-size?
Yeah, it'll all be life-size, so you'll be able to walk through it, yeah. yeah, so it's a huge project, and I'm really excited about this opportunity, and it's been a challenge because I feel like you talk about it on your show a lot, the whole imposter syndrome thing. Like, I've had to snap myself out of it so many times. Like, it's been a really cool opportunity, and I just I hope that it turns out well. We'll see.
I really wish I could see it. Is that have you done a lot of shows outside of Las Vegas of your work, or is this kind of a newer experience to like go and like do your work and then you leave it behind and people are looking at it without you there?
Yeah, that's the thing about being an artist here in Las Vegas is you kind of have to, to be a full-time artist, you have to show your work in other places because at the moment there are no venues. There's not enough venues for you to be showing year around here without people getting sick of you. So, it's a smaller art community here, but it is a substantial one. And they're working. We're the largest metropolitan area without an art museum in the United States.
Oh, wow.
So we don't have an art museum in Las Vegas. So that says a lot.
Yeah.
But changing, they have designated a place for the new art museum. And it'll be in the downtown area. And I think they're going to start working on it pretty soon, so that's going to be a game changer, and hopefully encourage more galleries and you know, and we do have an arts district, and hopefully that will kind of start picking up again, because it was pretty good for a while before the, you know, before the market crash in the 2000s. There was a pretty cool art scene here in Las Vegas, gallery scene I should say, yeah, so that's something that I have to travel now to kind of show my work, and it's been cool because I love representing Las Vegas. People people are super intrigued, like an artist living in Las Vegas. Do you work in a casino? I'm like, I have worked in casinos. Yes. But no, they're, you know, it's just a regular town like anywhere else. And, yeah, I've shown in, like I told you before, I've shown in Arkansas and now Denver. And I think for the last like 5 years, I've had shows outside of Vegas just because of that fact.
Yeah. When I first met Kim in college, I couldn't believe she grew up in Las Vegas. I was like, oh, it's not somewhere people just visit. You grew up there.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Totally.
Let's see. How long have I kept you here? Is there something from like the last year that you're really proud of that you want to tell me about? Like a lesson you've learned or something like that? It doesn't have to be like a huge event, but.
Let's see. I think that I'm finally, I mean, I think this happens to, I turned 30. So that was I didn't think it was going to be a big deal. But now that I'm thinking about the past year, it is a big deal. Yeah. And it's, I see myself giving a shit about what other people think more and more every day. So, so that realization, like, oh, hey, like, I don't care if that person doesn't like me. You know what? Fuck that person. I'm cool. Like, I don't need their acceptance.
Yeah.
I'm gonna keep stepping. It's gonna be fine.
That's great.
That letting go of people and letting go of that need for everybody to like you has been huge. And then also saying, you know what? I'm gonna say no. I'm gonna start saying no to people, and I'm gonna start hanging out with people that I actually love and that I love being around. Speaking of our mutual friend Kim.
Yeah.
Anytime I can spend time with her, I do, because she's fucking awesome. I love her, and that's the kind of people that I want to keep around me. People that are positive and encouraging. And then that also checks me. Like, why am I talking shit? Why am I complaining all the time to this person? Because sometimes you build relationships, and that's what I realized too. Oh my gosh. Like, some of the relationships that I have are just based on talking shit about other people or complaining.
Yeah.
And then when you realize that, and you can say, wait, let's talk about something positive that's happened. Like, let's not dwell on.
It's easy
on
to do. It's easy to fall into that trap.
Yeah, and some of my relationships with friends have completely changed because of that, in really positive ways. Like, now it's like, oh wow, I guess we really have to get to know each other now, because we're not just complaining anymore, you know?
Yeah.
So it's cool. It's pretty cool. And yeah, I think that's probably my biggest realization of 2016 is, it's okay if not everybody likes you. Like, you need to get over that shit. Nobody nobody likes that anyway in the first place. You know what I mean?
Why does it take us that long to learn that? I wish that I had learned that so much earlier.
Isn't that crazy? I think we just get tired. And then... I feel like I'm already like 70, because I'm like, I went out the other night and I was like, really? With my cousins. I'm one of the oldest cousins I'm half Mexican, half Guatemalan.
Uh-huh.
My Guatemalan side, there's like 80 first cousins. So
oh my
it's
gosh.
Like a lot. Yeah. So we went out the other night and we went to this bar downtown here in Vegas, and I could not believe how loud it was there. And I just said, like, to my cousins, like, are you kidding me? We're gonna pay money to drink at this place? I don't think so. Let's go somewhere where you can sit down and talk. And they're like, Justin, you're just old now. And I'm like, I guess I'm old, because I'm too old for this. I would rather be somewhere quiet right now. Just go. So that's something else that I'm enjoying now, is the quiet. You know what I mean?
I'm totally the same way.
How is it in New York though? Like, do you have to there's people everywhere. Like, do you have your places to hide? Or, like, to just...
I mean,
breathe?
I do. It's harder in the winter, honestly, because a lot of those places are, like, the parks and stuff like that. But it, there's a certain amount of anonymity, which is kind of another way of being alone. Like, I'm always listening to podcasts. I've always got my headphones in. And because there's so many people and they don't know you, and other people are doing crazier shit on the train or on the streets, it's like nobody's going to care if you're sitting there talking to yourself or whatever you're doing. It does kind of feel like you're alone in public, which is weird.
Yeah, because probably everybody has that mentality there. Like, I'm just doing my thing. Don't bother me.
Every once in a while, I do miss, like, that feeling of, like, being in your car when you really feel, like, totally alone.
Yeah.
I don't have that anymore. Or, like, in our apartment, luckily they're not doing it right now, but, like, the kids who live upstairs are always stomping around. So you're, like, I'm not alone. Even though I'm alone in my apartment, I can feel the people. Have you been to New York?
Totally. Yeah, and that's why I'm asking you, because when I went there, I felt like I couldn't see sky, and it was just such a weird thing to come back to Las Vegas after being in New York for a couple weeks, and like being like, oh my gosh, like I can see the sky, like I can breathe. You know, I just felt like in New York there was just, you just move at a different pace there, and I felt like people were just always on top of me, but that's because I'm used to the West and just being, just having, you know, having a giant garage space, you know, to myself, being in a car, having, you know, 8-lane streets in Las Vegas, basically, you know?
Yeah. Well, that, since I grew up in the woods in Michigan, and I do, I like both. Like, if I leave the city, it's always a good break, but then I miss it and I want to come back. Or if I'm in the country, I love it, but then I miss the city. I miss being able to walk everywhere.
Yeah.
All of that.
That is nice. That, I will say.
I love that.
That really is awesome. Yeah. I have a little taste of that here living downtown now at this artist residency. I could like walk to a coffee shop or like walk to, you know, the store, but it's not like New York. Not like that. It's like pretend city here when it comes to that.
Do you ever, or you're just used to it because you grew up there, but do you ever get overwhelmed by the amount of, like, tourists and the whole scene of the Strip and everything?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, I feel that as Las Vegans, we stay away from the Strip at all costs. So, like, the only reason I actually go onto the Las Vegas Strip is to show people around, like friends around. So there's people that come visit Las Vegas and they see Vegas, they see the Strip more than I do. I mean, when I used to work at Caesar's Palace on the Strip, so I had to go there every day, but it wasn't like I was walking on Las Vegas Boulevard. I went in through the back entrance and just ducked out, you know, through the basement. It's not like I was on the Strip every day, but yeah, I think we stay away from it because it is overwhelming. It is pretty crazy out there, and it's insane. And especially now, it feels like, you know, like on Hollywood Boulevard where there's all those like people dressed up in costumes and everybody's busking and all that. That's become the whole Strip now, and it's just packed full of that stuff.
Yeah,
and it's you know, people say that they don't like Vegas because it's fake. And it's just like all this, you know, all these facades and fake architecture and fake people. But I think the reality is that it's too real. Like you're faced with reality every time you walk out on the Strip. You're like, holy shit, what are these people doing here? You know, kind of thing. But yeah, it's interesting just seeing the shift in Las Vegas, because it's no longer about gambling, which used to be the big draw to Vegas. Now it's about having these kind of big experiences, walking around and, you know, looking at these big fountains and going to see your favorite DJ here and, eating a really expensive meal there when before right. it was like $2 buffet and you get to play slot machines, you know, it's a whole different scene.
What are some of your favorite like local Vegas spots, artistic or otherwise, that you like to go to when you want to be inspired, or in case anyone listening happens to be out there?
I love downtown Vegas. So there's a difference. So people think that our downtown is the Strip, Las Vegas Boulevard. That actually is not. It kind of divides the town in half from the west side to the east side of Vegas. So the Strip used to be the highway that got you to the original downtown here in Vegas, and that's Fremont Street. Fremont Street, to be honest, it's no better than Las Vegas Boulevard.
I've been there once, but it was a long time ago.
It's also very real there and very sad, but there's really amazing signs there. I love neon, and there are amazing neon signs down there. You can see some signs that have been there since like the 1950s. And for Vegas, mid-century is a long time ago. Like, that's our history here, right? So the old thing standing, I think, was built in, I think, 1905 or something. So like, that's our oldest structure on Fremont Street. So it's still there. And so walking up and down that is fun, just to get perspective. And there's like the east side of Fremont Street, that's like a new like gentrified bar district, which is fun sometimes. But I think my favorite things to do are off the Strip. There's actually a lot of nature around Las Vegas. So we have Red Rock Canyon National Park. We have the Valley of Fire, just a little bit out of Vegas. And I just went on a walk at the Wetland. We have a wetlands park here that it's with all the reclaimed water from the Strip. They actually have filled in some land, and it's like this really cool, almost nature preserve.
Oh, cool.
So that's what I do to kind of escape sometimes. But there are very, I don't want to hate on the Strip, because there are very important moments that that I always kind of, I'm going to call moments, like experiences on the Strip that are very unique to Las Vegas and important to me in a nostalgic sense, or just in a, I don't know, to me they're just kind of magical, like going to the Flamingo, for example, and just standing out in their garden and just hanging out with a bunch of pink flamingos in the middle of a casino, right? Like, that's pretty special. Or the moment when I was walking outside of the Bellagio after Whitney Houston died, and the dancing waters outside of the Bellagio were choreographed to Whitney Houston singing the national anthem. That was incredible.
Oh my gosh.
Or the fact that you can go to Aria or the Crystals is like a very fancy mall inside of one of the casino compounds, and the Louis Vuitton store in there has a James Turrell installation on the fourth floor that you can go there for free. You just sign up, you just call them up and go and experience that, right? Like, that James Turrell piece, if it was in LA, for example, there would be a 4-month waiting list to go inside of it and experience it. But here in Las Vegas, you can literally call the day of or the day before and experience that, because it's owned by Louis Vuitton on the Strip, right? And so there's a lot of really cool places from an artist's perspective or an artist's point of view to view on the Strip.
Yeah. When you're working as a curator, like for the spaces that you're in charge of, what's that like for you? What kinds of things do you look for? How do you find out about new artists? That kind of thing.
Yeah, that's been fun, because, you know, being in Las Vegas and in the art scene, you kind of get caught up with the same people. So being a curator, we actually do a call once a year to set up the programming for the next season. So that's coming up in the next month. And I've been getting submissions lately. So that's how we do it. We put the call out. But really, it's me recruiting people. So to send in their applications. So it's been interesting. And it's also been a challenge because I won't show work that maybe hasn't been thought of before. Or just, it's so cheesy to use this term, but just think outside the box, you know, like it can't, it's... When you go into a community center or a cultural center, you're used to seeing certain types of artwork. And that's because those centers are meant to serve the community. And you want artwork in there that's accessible.
Yeah.
And that everybody can understand. And I totally get that because that's my mission with my art too, you know. But I think there's a way to get contemporary art in those spaces that's also... for the community, and it's actually serving that purpose. So that's kind of been the cool balance for me, is like trying to find contemporary artists to show in those spaces that maybe have work that will make people think a little bit, but also right. work that makes sense for those spaces. Challenging artists that are more traditional, maybe, to do bigger installations. Like I have there's a lot of really amazing illustrators here in town that work for magazines or are them to think about making their work on a different scale or things like that. So also talking to those, what would be considered folk artists or street artists, and as a curator, maybe getting them to think of their work a little bit differently specifically for the space, and not just thinking, oh shit, I have to make 8 paintings to fill that room.
Right.
No, like really think about, as a sculptor, as an installation artist, think about that room as your canvas. Think about that room as your installation space instead of just making artwork to sell. Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's the fun challenge.
When you are in a place where you're feeling like you're going to the dark side or you're not inspired or, are there concrete things that you reach for again and again? Like a certain artist you like to look at their work or a book you read or whatever?
Okay. I don't know.
You can say whatever you want.
There is this video that I always go back to that gets me in a better mood. And it's from the early 2000s when Oprah had a Legends Ball. Do you know about these Legends Balls?
No.
Legends Balls. So she used to have this thing called the Legends Ball. So Oprah Winfrey would open her house up and set up her backyard like church, basically. So she'd set up all these lawn chairs, set up a stage, all these umbrellas, and invite all the divas, all the legends. Right?
Okay.
So there's this video. So think of like all the famous gospel singers and then all the famous diva pop stars. So, you know, it's not only is it Shirley Caesar and all these other amazing gospel in the audience, Chaka Khan, Diana Ross, Dionne Warwick. Okay, so, and everybody's there, Mariah Carey, all those people. There's this episode from the Legends Ball where they just start improvising this gospel song, and all these famous singers start grabbing the mic and just going off. And like Oprah says in the clip, Jesus showed up and he showed out. It is one of the most amazing videos ever. And Patti LaBelle closes it when she grabs the mic. She kills it. She just goes off. Like it made me believe in God again. Like it was amazing.
That sounds
it's an amazing video, and I try to watch it I don't want to get desensitized, you know? So I watch it, I think, at my lowest moments when I'm like, oh, man, I'm not feeling great right now. I need something to pick me up. And I will put that video on and just feel the spirit. The last time I saw it was during Thanksgiving, because one of my cousins was actually feeling low. And I was like, all right, let's I got to show you a video.
Yo. What would one type into the search on YouTube to find such a video?
Jesus shows up at Oprah's Legends Ball.
Okay.
Yeah, I'll send you the link.
I'm going to watch it immediately. That sounds incredible.
That's one of the things that I like to watch.
This is my new favorite answer to this question.
Really? Oh, my God. Also, Pat... LaBelle singing the ABCs on Sesame Street. That will get you feeling great.
Okay.
It is incredible. Yeah. Yeah. There's also certain movies that are really great. I think I love watching the movie Selena. That's like comfort food, right?
But mm-hmm.
There's certain films that that take you back to a better place. So movies like Selena or movies like, I know it's just so stupid, but I love Mean Girls. I love that movie.
It's a great, it's a smart movie. All right. And then, is there anything that you've seen recently that you want to recommend of any art form?
Yeah. I mean, I just saw the movie Moonlight and that was pretty special. I don't usually go to the movies, which I don't know why. I love movies, but I never make the effort to go. I think it's a growing up poor thing where we never went. So I feel like it's this luxury that I can't afford. But then, like, I go to a bar and get two drinks and I spend the same amount of fucking money. So
right.
It's just, like, it's weird. It's this weird mentality. But, Moonlight was really special. I just saw that.
So good.
So I recommend you see that. It's a really beautiful coming of age movie, and just the cinematography, the acting, oh, color, it's just beautiful.
Yeah.
And as far as I want to recommend some podcasts, because
Please. That's
all I do is listen to podcasts. I just started listening to the podcast called The Racist Sandwich. And it's really awesome.
Okay.
It's relating race to food. That I think the people that make that are in the Northwest somewhere. And so The Racist Sandwich has been one of my faves lately. Also the podcast, oh my gosh, I'm forgetting the name. Oh, it's a WNYC podcast called The Sportful. It's very similar, done by Dan Pashman. I fucking love The Sportful. All these food podcasts that I have to listen to after I eat, because if I listen to them before, I get so hungry.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of really great independent podcasts also that I love to listen to. One of them is called Chicano Cast.
Okay.
Out of Los Angeles. It's just this like 50-something-year-old Chicano in his garage, I think, and he puts them out like once a month. But yeah, those are just a few of my recommendations.
That's awesome.
What's new? Can I ask you questions?
Sure.
what are you up to? What is next for you this year?
You know, I'm gonna try.
What do you feel like? Oh, go ahead. Sorry.
I feel like this week I need to like reevaluate with the podcast and think about what I'm doing with it. But it's been like a year and a half and I'm still going strong, and I'm doing a play right now. So it's since like the beginning of November, I feel like I haven't been focusing on the podcast as much, which is great because I have another artistic outlet right now.
Yeah.
I want to kind of zero back in and see like, okay, what's the goal? What's the goal this year?
Right.
So I'm doing that. And then, I'm doing this Chekhov play right now that takes place in a bar. So it's like half drinking game, half Chekhov play, and it's a lot of fun. So that's been really nice.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
How many times does your podcast come out? Every other week?
Every Friday. Every Friday.
Every Friday?
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you feel like it's the podcast is helping you like in your like art?
I do.
You know what I mean? Your practice?
I do, and it's been really positive, like you were talking about earlier, like just to sit down with the people who I find are positive influences in my life and who I know are thoughtful about these kinds of issues as artists. And so to make that a priority of like at least once a week, I get to sit down with someone I really respect and talk about real things and not just bullshit or small talk.
Yeah.
I think it helps me as a person, and it helps keep me a healthy artist, I think, and I'm learning a lot from all of them.
Yeah.
So it's been really good for me. I'd like to grow my listenership a little more this year. I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah.
But it's just something I do. It's something I do because I enjoy it. So I try not to put too much stress on myself about making it more professional or whatever, because it's not worth making it stressful. Yeah.
Totally. You're on Libsyn, right? That's what you used to host it?
Yeah. What do you guys use?
Yeah. We were on Libsyn, and now we're on this thing called Audio Boom.
Okay.
And Audio Boom, maybe you should think about switching to Audio Boom because it's free.
Really?
And they match you with advertisers. So if you notice, some of our new episodes have little ads at the beginning.
Yeah, I was going to ask you how that came about.
They contacted us. But if you're interested, maybe I can recommend you. And I think you can just start hosting on there for free. But it's cool because then they distribute it to, like, we've got more listens because of them, because they distribute it to everything like Stitcher and Podbean and all that, all the other extra, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Just an option.
Is it making you a few pennies here and there with those ads?
Yeah, I think it's for every 1,000 listens, you get like $4 or something.
Awesome.
So we've made like $4. but it's free. Free hosting, which is nice.
Yeah, that is nice.
Yeah. Yeah, well, it's cool. I can't wait to see what happens to your, like, if you, you know, it's podcasts are so important, I think, to so many people, especially podcasts that are conversational, because you really feel a connection. And then when you come out like every week, it's something constant. And even if it's just in a few households that listen to you, you know, a few people, it's still pretty cool.
Well, thank you so much for doing this. Yeah. It was such a pleasure.
Yeah, it was so nice meeting you.
Listening to the Compass podcast. I'm Leah Walsh. More episodes are coming soon. Please look for us on Facebook and iTunes. I'd like to thank the following people for their generosity. The Compass cover art is by Kim Miller, music by Brendan Spieth, audio assistance from Nick Choksi, and a special thanks to Frankie J. Alvarez. See you next time.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway, and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com.
If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but not there.
No.
No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.